So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
If you've never heard of the Wisconsin Transparency Project, you're not alone. So it's Wisconsin Eye mission in this program to highlight a new organization with an important purpose. I want to welcome and thank Tom Kamenick, president and founder of the Wisconsin Transparency Project. There, I'll get it right. Welcome to Wisconsin Eye.
Thank you for having me out here.
Simple question. Why do we need a transparency project, Tom?
We need a transparency project to improve government accountability in the state of Wisconsin. So we are a law firm newly formed that is dedicated to enforcing Wisconsin's open records and open meetings laws.
Okay, and is this a nonprofit? No.
No, this is a for-profit venture. My working theory is that there is a significant demand out there for low-cost legal services. So I'm going to be offering free consultations to people who have questions about open records or open meetings. To answer questions, take a look at a request or a response from a custodian. And if a lawsuit is needed to be filed, I'm offering very low-cost representation to anybody in the state seeking any record.
In one of your press releases, you're saying, Wisconsin's open government laws are very strong, and this is an important but they are woefully under-enforced. Why?
The Attorney General and the district attorneys in all the counties around the state are empowered to enforce these laws. So people file complaints with them all the time, but they're almost never acted on. District attorneys typically will say, you know, this is really unfortunate, but we have a lack of resources and we have crimes we need to be busy prosecuting. I can't spare the time to handle this right now. If you send a request to the Attorney General, the response is almost either, well, this is a local issue, it's not of statewide importance, so that's not worth our resources. Or, well, this is a statewide issue, but as the Attorney General, we might be called upon to represent a state defendant in court, so we can't actually help you sue our own clients. So it's up to individuals to file their own lawsuits on either open records or open meetings. But legal representation is expensive, and very few individuals or entities can afford to pay an attorney the tens of thousands of dollars it might normally take to prosecute a lawsuit.
Take us to school on why you say our current open records and our open government laws are very strong. What are the good parts of our open records and
they're written very, very well.
How old are they?
They go back in principle back to the early 20th century, but in their current form, they're from the 1970s, and they haven't been changed more than tweaking here or there since then. But the records law applies to virtually any information that's being kept by a government entity, and it doesn't matter what form it's in. If it's in electronic format, if it's a physical piece of paper, if it's a map, if it's a recording, a video or audio recording, those are all count as records. So the law is written broadly to capture just about everything that's going to be held by a government office or a government official with information on it that's related to a government purpose. Now turn to the open meetings law, which applies to virtually any body, a governmental body that meets together to take some kind of action or make some kind of decision. So your obvious ones are things like your school board, your city council, your county, the county board. And then you also have smaller things like committees are subject to the law if they're formed by a government entity and if they're doing a government purpose. So the open meetings law says that anybody can attend one of these meetings. They must be held in public. And not only that, the body must give notice ahead of time. So they put out an agenda at least 24 hours in advance saying, here's what it is we're going to talk about at this meeting or what we're going to do so people can come and watch if it's something that interests them or be heard if they get to speak on the topic.
Well, as a reporter and an editor, this is a subject that I'm very, spent a career in. So let's talk about open records. What does it mean? Is it increasingly that the use of the term draft to deny something from becoming public? Has that been a growing trend? Excuse me.
I've seen more of that in the recent years. At my former employer, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, we handled...
You were there for how long?
8 years. 8 years. Right from its founding in 2011. So I'm onboarding two organizations in a row kind of with my career here. But the draft issue comes up because there's an exception written into the open records law that says a draft document prepared for the originator's use is not a record. So that means if I'm the mayor and I'm typing up a letter and I've got a draft version of it, and I make some changes, the original draft version is not a record and doesn't have to be turned over. But as soon as a draft or something labeled a draft gets handed to somebody else to look at, it loses that protection. So if it's the mayor's secretary who writes the draft and then hands it to the mayor, all of a sudden now you've got a transfer. Or if it's something between two different departments, if the fire department is drafting up a document, a policy document, and sends it to the mayor's office for review, and then there's changes, as soon as it's shared a kind of across entities or across individuals, it loses that protection of being for the person who wrote it for their personal use.
Well, if a mayor sends an email to a member of the council about an issue that's going to come before the full body, is it no longer a draft because it's been shared?
Once it's been shared, because the mayor is in the of the local government, it's in the executive branch. As opposed to the common council is the legislative branch.
Same thing if the mayor writes the fire chief or the police chief or the public safety
or
EMT or anything. What about the exceptions in the open records law? Are they pretty tight? Have the courts interpret them not correctly, but do we have a pretty clear definition of what's exempt when a public body can go into closed session?
Do you want to talk about open records or open meetings?
Let's talk meetings.
Meetings. Okay.
Thanks for the clarification.
Yeah. So for meetings, there are a list of statutory exemptions for when they can go into a closed meeting, sometimes called an executive meeting. Mm-hmm. And those are very clearly delineated in the statute. And they cover things like a personnel hearing. So a disciplinary hearing can be closed. If they are bargaining with a developer on a contract for a public for public works, because the anything discussing that would make their bargaining position worse if it came out that they're willing to pay $3 million for it, but they're hoping to only have to pay 2.5. Well, if the developer knows they'll go up to $3 million,
sure.
Of course, so that kind of information can be discussed in private as well, and because attorney confidentiality is important. Anything that's to do with potential litigation can be discussed in private with an attorney for the board as well.
Okay, I'm going to wonk out here. Let's say you have a 7-member city council, and they have a meeting, and then suddenly 4 of them go to a watering hole to drink soda, of course. That's 4 of the 7.
It is. Those
issues have been litigated, haven't they?
That's right, and that's pretty clear, too, and there's very good guidance from the Attorney General and from the cases from the courts that that is, in fact, a meeting. If you've got a quorum...
Even though you've banged, you've closed the formal council session...
Like I talked about, the body is defined broadly to cover almost anything that would get together and meet and act as a group in the government. It applies to when they have a meeting, and a meeting is broadly defined, too, and it's whenever... A sufficient number to take action, which is usually a quorum, get together to engage in government business. That's a meeting. So if they do it afterwards at the bar, that's a meeting that they didn't properly notice, and that's a violation.
Do you think Wisconsin residents are generally becoming more aware of the need to enforce our open records and open meetings laws?
I certainly saw that.
Is this rising
Law and Liberty
on their list of concerns?
Yeah, we took increasing calls on these topics of people are just getting more engaged with their local governments and realizing that there's more being done there than perhaps they thought in the past. So they're paying more attention and running into things that are bothering them more that need to be dealt with.
What are their most common concerns with open records and open meetings?
Very common to hear complaints just about how long it takes. And that's one of the things the Transparency Project wants to get into the trenches and fight for is that Wisconsin's open records law says that a record shall be produced as soon as practicable and without delay. That's a quote from the statute, and you'll notice it sounds important and it sounds like there should be a big pressure to get it done quickly and a high priority, but there's not a strict deadline on it. So you have some guidance from the Attorney General who says that generally speaking 10 business days should be more than enough to deal with to turn over most simple record requests. And if you think about it, especially in these electronic age, everything's stored on computers, much easier to find. You can run keyword searches for topics, or if electronic files are being kept in any remotely normal order, you've got folders that have descriptive names that explain what's inside them. So things should not be taking so long for government custodians to find. I had a request recently. I got a call in to the Transparency Project. It's actually the first case we're going to be bringing.
Congratulations.
Great. I can't tell you who it is or who it's against yet.
Just generically.
But generically, a person made a request for a calendar and a budget, just two very simple documents. It should take somebody less than 10 minutes to find those two things and email them over a copy. It's been a month, and they haven't done it, and they haven't responded to the request. They're ignoring it.
Well, as a student of public policy, sometimes governments can say there is a search fee for this, and there is a per-page fee. How reasonable do they have to be, number one, in their search fee? We have to designate someone to do this research, and we're going to charge you XYZ for copies. And sometimes it can be $30 a page. Okay, I might have made that up. It might be a little high. But do you understand my question?
Yeah, well, courts,
search and fees.
Courts get to charge $1.25 per page, and unfortunately that's baked into the statute, so little we can do about that
that's
unless
courts.
It's a legislative fee. Yeah.
But
they're treated
but XYZ City but Council.
The rest of them, so we'll start with photocopying fees. The law says that they can charge the actual and necessary costs of making a reproduction.
That's in the statute.
That's in the statute. So if you step back a second, say, well, do you really need paper copies? Now, the rule actually now is, this was established in a case just last year that I was involved with as an amicus, so a non-party filing a brief, making an argument to the court about a certain result. Between Bill Leaders, president of the Wisconsin Freedom of Information Council,
and a colleague, yes,
and the and state representative Scott Krug,
yes,
and he had asked for electronic copies of records, and Representative Krug said, "No, I'm going to print them out and charge you a per page copy." Well, the courts ruled you can't do that. So, tip number one for requesters is if you want electronic copies, ask for them. They have to give them to you if they're in electronic format already. So if you want an Excel spreadsheet that's on their computers or emails, you can get them in that electronic format. Now, say you do want paper copies or the documents are in paper format already. Yeah. They can charge, like I said, the actual and necessary cost of that. Well, how much is that to copy a page? The Attorney General's compliance guide used to say, well, we think it should be about 15 cents per page, but anything more than 25 cents is suspect. Well, of course, everybody read that as permission. Hey, we can charge 25 cents, and nobody will question us, right? 25 cents per page. But last year, Attorney General Schimmel sent out an informal memo to kind of everybody around the state saying, that's probably not right. What you actually should do is you actually should calculate the cost. So, how much is your per paper cost? You buy a ream of paper. How much does one piece of that paper cost? You run it on your printer. What does the toner cost for your printer? Are you leasing a printer? What's your per copy charge for your lease? And they calculated it, and their answer was it's about a penny per page. That was the actual cost. So that's one of the things I want to do at the Transparency Project is do a little research and see, are custodians around the state following these guidelines and actually doing their calculations and finding out what their actual cost is, or are they just still charging a flat, made-up number like 25 cents?
You've been working on this issue for a number of years. Mm-hmm. What has the explosion of e-records and social media, has it helped or hurt the cause of transparency?
I think it's helped quite a lot it's much easier for people to find things. Email is super convenient, and almost everybody in government likes to use it. It makes I hate to say a paper trail because it's not a paper trail, but that's the concept. It creates easily searchable, easily downloadable, easily transferable records. And when I say searchable, it's not just searchable by the custodian to find these records, but once they're transferred electronically, now you can use Control F and search for what you need in the documents instead of having to read page after page after page if you're looking for something that's not quite so obvious.
Well, but what about if a public official, posts something and then 2 minutes later said, I shouldn't have done that. I'm going to delete it. Is that record still out there?
It kind of depends on where the record was created electronically and if backups are made or not. So there are laws about retention of public records. They're actually in the same chapter as the Open Records Law and the Open Meetings Law. But unfortunately, there's no enforcement mechanism for those. So if somebody winds up deleting a record that they shouldn't have deleted, if the law says you're supposed to keep it 2 years and it was deleted beforehand, and if it's gone, there's not much you can do about it through the Open Records Law. They only have to provide records that still exist at that point. At that point, it's just an embarrassing story for them when you get to point it out.
You spoke of Bill Leaders. He's president of the FOI Council and the editor of The Progressive. I want to ask you about this quote. This is Bill saying, the growing culture of contempt for the public's right to know. Is that true? A growing contempt?
That's what I see too.
Why?
And that's why we're forming the project here is because it goes back to what we talked about earlier about the lack of consistent enforcement of these laws. They've been on the books for decades, and custodians basically know that there's no real likelihood that they're ever going to be called on these issues because up until now, there's not many lawsuits being filed, and that's something we hope to change. So we want to be aggressive about this, and we want to file on the simple cases that aren't going to make a big splash, but just hopefully the mass of them will kind of start to change things in a better direction.
Do you want your clients to be individuals or organizations?
Either one. It really doesn't matter at all for me.
Okay. And they should come to you with any type of thing? Should they follow the process? And then if they feel that they're not getting any answers, any timely answers, is that when they come to you? Or do you want to be involved on the front end?
They can come to me at any point in the process. So if they want some records and don't know exactly how to write the request, they can reach out. Website is wiopenrecords.com, nice and easy to remember. Go to that website and you can contact me directly, and I can help you draft a record request. If you have a question about whether a meeting went into closed session properly, I can take a look, offer some quick advice on that too, and that's done at no charge to my clients. If things progress and you filed record requests and they're responding and denying them, or they're just not responding and it's been a month, mm-hmm. I can file a lawsuit for you. And I'm offering my services on a very low cost to my clients. So the upfront costs are just going to cover whatever my out-of-pocket costs are for filing a lawsuit, and then enough to cover a couple hours of my work. The rest, I work on contingency because open records and open meetings laws both have provisions that say when you win your case, the defendant, meaning the government, has to pay your attorney's fees. So I'm operating kind of like a civil rights lawyer who files a case on a constitutional violation. Maybe there's not a lot of damages, but because of the violation, there's an attorney fee award at the end. Open records law, open meetings law works the same way. So my clients are out very little up front. The risk of
can you give examples of the out very little up front?
It's in the few hundred dollars.
Okay,
and it's very cheap for hiring an attorney. And the great thing is when you win, you get that money back first if you're my client. And on top of that, there's actually a provision for $100 in statutory damages, so my clients might wind up a little bit in money after the lawsuit.
What's the upside for somebody who feels that they have a complaint or has a transparency question? Why should I go up against my local school board? They've got a number of attorneys. They won't answer my question. You seem to be peddling hope to that individual.
Like I said before, there's areas where there's honest disagreement about whether the law applies or a mm-hmm. record has to be released, but I think there's just a lot of times when they're delaying for no purpose, they are charging fees, high search fees, which didn't get into the details, we can go back to it if you
Please
want,
do.
But search fees are often charged in ways that are totally ridiculous.
What's the highest search fee that you've heard of?
I've seen over $30,000.
For what?
For weeks and weeks and weeks of people searching, supposedly. And then they're huge things. But it's often just even a few hundred dollars, a couple thousand dollars, and is enough to dissuade people. And the custodians know that they're not going to get much pushback on it. And I see ridiculous things. I saw a request that said, okay, I want one person, your mayor. I want the emails from that your mayor sent for a one-week period. That's a lot of emails, but it's easy to find them. If you go into Outlook or Gmail, it's very easy to isolate that set of emails. It can take you less than 15 minutes to do it, and then you found the records. Mm-hmm. Now, if the custodian's saying, well, we need to go through them all for a long time, it's going to take us a while to make sure that the no confidential information is in them, which is correct. They need to make sure they're not handing out people's personal, financial or medical information. None of that should be released. But the courts have ruled that they cannot charge for that time to separate out information that can be released and can't be released. Once they found the records, which is just this chunk of email from these dates, that search fees should stop right there. But we're seeing people's custodians say that they get to charge for hours and hours of review. They're saying it's not redaction, it's review. But it's for review whether or not you're going to redact the information. So it really is a redaction charge, and they should not be charging it.
Yeah, but here's a prediction. You're going to hear from some people who have a personal vendetta against an individual, an elected or appointed official. You're going to have to throw the flag and say, I'm sorry, this just doesn't appear to be an open record violation.
Sometimes I'm going to have to tell people that no, your denial was correct. They can't turn over that information for you, so you're better off not filing a lawsuit.
Based on your experience, do we have more transgressions on the open records or the open meetings side in Wisconsin?
It's really hard to say because they're quite different. There's a lot more interest and a lot more enforcement of open records. And I think that's because there's a tangible result at the end, especially from a media company. If they know there's some records out there that will make or break a story, they want them and they get them. And if they need to file a lawsuit, they'll get the records at the end. In an open meetings lawsuit, really all you get is a declaration from the court that said, no, you did that wrong. You have to do it this way in the future. And if you take that up to the higher courts, you then get a precedential opinion from the Court of Appeals or the Supreme Court, meaning it applies statewide and everybody has to follow this. And this is basically a new rule, a new understanding of the statutes, and everybody's got to do it this way. So that those are real good to get those. But in the end, the governmental body, whatever it was, did what it did. And there are cases where courts can undo that and say, nope, you've got to go back to the beginning and do it again. But if the political will is there to repeat whatever it was that was done, they'll just go through it through the proper channels and do it again. So it's harder to get a tangible result unless all you want is the principle and you want to make sure they're following the rule, which is still very important, but the incentives are quite different.
Is the Transparency Project needed because, let's be blunt, newspapers and news organizations don't have the resources that they did 3 and 4 decades ago?
That's the theory I'm working under, is that there is enough. The Transparency Project is a bit of an experiment. I left a steady job and a good career. I love the work I did there, but sometimes you got to take an adventure and say, I think there's enough demand out there to be able to enable me to file a steady stream of lawsuits, and maybe many of them settle quickly with only small awards or... But I'm hoping that there's a critical mass out there to allow me to earn a living and keep producing this. This is going to be an experiment for the next couple of years.
How will you judge whether the project is a success 3 and 4 and 5 years from now?
I think if I'm still around, that'll be the sign of success.
You've grown. Are you going to have a different practice, or is this what you're going to do full time?
I want to focus on this full time. Yeah. My wife, God bless her, has a very well-paying, steady job, so that is why I'm able to do this, that can take kind of this risk of that maybe this doesn't work out. But we're going to give it a few years, and we think it's going to work out. So if I'm still here 4 or 5 years from now, it's been going well.
Do you think attorneys for, first of all, the scope, you're interested in state and local governments?
Correct. I don't want to get into
entities,
federal.
Right?
Right. There are the state open
no
record
private
laws.
Private businesses, no. Okay.
Not as defendants, no. I would represent a private business if they were seeking records. But state and local entities are what the state's open government laws apply to. There are federal Freedom of Information Act laws.
I was going to ask whether you intend to
get
involved.
It seems
federally
unlikely because the laws are a lot weaker. They have a lot more exemptions, and the stuff you can get is just not as good, generally speaking. And it doesn't even apply at all to the legislature, to Congress. And the attorney fee provisions aren't as good either. So I can't get my attorney fee awards in most cases in a federal case.
Do you have an opinion whether state and local governments have become less responsive to some of these queries?
That's what it looks like. If I've been working with the Freedom of Information Council. I've been a member for almost as long as I've worked.
How is your mission different than the FOI Council?
FOI doesn't file lawsuits directly itself. Occasionally, they will get involved as an amicus party, as a friend of the court brief in more prominent cases.
Okay. So you hope to be around in 3 to 5 years. You want to make this full time. You're taking a risk here.
Yes.
And you're banking on what?
Banking on bad behavior by government actors. So that seems like a pretty safe bet. But the real challenge, I think, is getting my name and the name of the organization out there and helping people realize there's a resource out there for you. I can help you. Won't cost you anything if I'm just going to help you answer some questions about these issues. But if you need to file a lawsuit, we can do it at a very low cost. And honestly, right now I need some money to keep the light on, which is why I need a little money up front for my clients. I'm hoping that if this goes well and if I have a steady enough stream, I can cut off that upfront payment completely or maybe just bring it down to just the out-of-pocket expenses. And at that point, it's very inexpensive for clients to bring these cases.
Well, it's so important to hold state and local governments accountable. Mm-hmm. And you're taking a risk here in forming the Transparency Project. Go back again over how someone who has a concern can contact you and your organization.
They can reach out to me through my website. It's wiopenrecords.com. Hopefully Google searching is working for the Wisconsin Transparency Project. If not, it's something I'm on at the moment as I'm building this law firm myself. So look for me, search for me, and reach out, and I can help you out.
Okay. And they contact you, and you say, there might be something here, so I'm going to ask you to pay a small contingent, a small fee.
A small fee up front.
To cover your expenses.
Yep. We file a lawsuit.
Yes.
They win the lawsuit. I'll get paid my attorney's fees, which is basically calculated on a reasonable hourly rate for the number of hours I worked on the case. And then out of that money, I pay back the client first with the amount of money that they paid back. So at most, they're out. If the case loses, they might be out the amount they paid up front. I'm out all my time for that. So, and yeah, I'm bearing a lion's share of that risk.
And you're out all your discovery costs, aren't you?
If we've paid for depositions, yeah. But a lot of open records cases don't need that much of a detailed discovery plan.
Okay, but the premise here is that state and local governments need the Transparency Project because
they need it too.
They're not quickly and adequately complying.
That's right. Yeah, I'll tell you, I often get questions, and I got them at Will too, about, well, aren't you hurting the taxpayer because they have to pay your attorney's fees, and that's money coming out of the public pocket? And number one, all these entities do have insurance plans and insurance companies that, that cover some portion of this. Everybody's deductible is different. But if even beyond that, I view it as an education cost, right? They're essentially paying me to educate them on what the proper response is to a record request. It's an expensive lesson, but it's one that's really important.
Fascinating. Tom Kominick, president of the Wisconsin Transparency Project, thanks for coming in and talking about the risk that you're taking. But we're talking here about accountability of state and local government. So, wow, important, very important.
It's great to be here, and thanks for the work you do, too.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol. Wisconsin Eye would not exist without generous donors like you. Please visit wiseye.org to make a donation today.